Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 293, and I'm here with James Jones.
Hi.
Back from the dead. John Lindemann.
It's my extreme pleasure to be here with you tonight, Johnny.
Extreme pleasure.
Extremely pleasing. And Guillaume Veillette.
Is the novelty gone yet?
No, because this is our first episode, all four being together as regular members of the podcast crew. It's also our last show before E3.
Our last
regular show, at least. There will be a Famicast out as well sometime before E3, or at least we expect there will be, and then there will be tons of podcasts during E3, both from the home and away teams. But we'll talk about that more at the end of the show. We have our E3 preview coming up, an annual tradition going way, way, way back to the early years of this show.
Of E3 1.
Yes, and that comes up in the second segment, but first, it's new business, and James has, actually, this is what I love, James. While most of America, many of our listeners are playing Xenoblade right now, this summer, you are instead playing Disaster Day of Crisis.
I am playing Disaster Day of Crisis, which...
from the makers of Xenoblade Chronicles.
No. Xenoblade is from the makers of Disaster Day of Crisis. You put respect where it belongs.
That's true. Preach.
So, you may remember Disaster Day of Crisis from the 2.5-minute audio blog I gave of what Disaster Day of Crisis should be like. And I may have undersold what the game is capable of in terms of sheer asshattery. So, if you're not familiar with Disaster Day of Crisis, it's a third-person adventure game where you play Ray, a member of the International Rescue Team, not making that up, who lost his friend on a volcano, not making that up.
Not even close.
When their helicopter got struck by the single ejected boulder from the volcano. In every direction, the one boulder hit their helicopter.
Again, not making it up.
Because,
the
why?
Volcano wasn't so much erupting as it was snorting out a booger.
It smoked a lot, and there was some rocks. It never actually blew out lava. But basically, we had your dramatic scene where I can't hold on much longer. You gotta hold on. Just go. I'll be fine. Just go. One of us should survive. And then his friend lets go and falls into the lava. It's great. It's awesome. It was fantastic.
He sacrifices himself so that the helicopter may land safely with the other person.
Oh, no, the helicopter's fucked. Those guys already died. They're just like, nope, we have to save each other. It's like, really? Come on, game. But this goes on for, there's about 12 minutes of you going up and down the mountain while it teaches you the incredibly complicated control system. So this is back in the era where you had to use every function of the Wii Remote. And that is always a terrible idea. So you can shoot with the pointer, and when it goes into this first person, like, it's still third person. It basically turns into Mad Dog McCree. And that is an accurate representation of what happens in this game. there's your basic, like, adventure mode where you walk through hazards and jump over fires and inhale noxious fumes and then pat yourself in the chest to get them out. Because there's a button for that. There's a button to take deep breaths and pat yourself on the chest to get noxious fumes out of your lungs. If they build up, you will die.
This is useful at concerts.
So I'm not going there. So I had a friend over last week, which is why I couldn't talk with you guys. And we were playing this game. And we've concluded a couple things. One, it's going to be really shitty to play this game by myself, because it's not nearly as fun without a second person there. Just to marvel in how terrible this really is.
I was going to say, to laugh at it.
So, one person is busy trying to shoot the terrorist. Oh, let's speak of the terrorist quickly. So, after he loses his friend, he quits the International Rescue Team, which is a very important sounding organization, if you ask me. Incredibly important sounding. He quits that because...
Yeah, he kind of goes rogue, right? Like, he just kind of loses his mind, and he's sort of like...
He gets invited to join, like, the Special Investigations Bureau. Again, a very important-sounding organization.
Yeah, he kind of quits the band. It's not about the music anymore, so...
Basically. But before... but So before his buddy dies, he gives Ray his pocket watch to give to his kid sister, which basically tells you immediately that dude is gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, in case I don't make it, give this to my sister. Mind you, at this point, all
my sister,
all,
who's really hot.
Yeah, he does say
no
that,
idea where
actually.
That story's gonna go.
He basically says, yeah, she's really attractive and really smart. Yep. But at this point, he gave him his watch to give to his sister with like a twisted ankle. He hadn't even gotten close to falling into the lava yet. It's like, game, come on, show some tact here. Don't show all your cards in the first hand. So, you know, A, the sister's fucked, because this dude is really fucked. So, 6 months later, random Ocean City's being evacuated from the West Coast from a hurricane that's going northeast. I mean, it was going northwest, excuse me. I turned to the person I was playing with, and I went to her. So they're on the East Coast then.
What a freak hurricane.
Wait, James, are you certain that you're in the Northern Hemisphere?
Yeah, they're on the East Coast of, I mean, they're on the West Coast of North America. So the storm was going west, headed towards a West Coast city. I'll let you think about how that's going to work out, because apparently that hurricane's coming from fucking Omaha. But, so the city's been evacuated, but apparently it's also full of terrorists who are former members of a special forces team that vanished.
Aren't they always?
Because, fuck, I don't know. So they're called Surge, which led to Herc making lots of Lieutenant Surge references, which was incredibly obnoxious. So this special forces team vanished on a mission. They've apparently kidnapped a seismologist 3 months ago, and that seismologist's assistant just happens to be Ray's dead friend's hot sister. Just coincidence. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, Ray has not given her the pocket watch yet, despite it being 6 months later, and he was completely unaware of the fact she had been kidnapped, so his dying friend's request to look after her really did not go to heart, apparently. So he now decides to take it on himself to go in there and rescue her, because they found them. They're in this warehouse. So an entire SWAT team unit gets annihilated by these former Special Forces guys. Oh, keep in mind, everyone's wearing the same uniform, which makes shooting incredibly difficult.
They're very organized, James.
This is stupid. But basically, I've killed about 800 members of Surge, and they're still coming, which means this is the biggest Special Forces unit ever. Apparently, it's the entire U.S. Special Forces have gone and vanished. I don't know. But so they've got the seismologist and Ray's hot dead friend's assistant, sister. And basically, they've got this machine, and like, it's almost ready, and then there's an earthquake. So presumably, Ray's dead friend's hot sister and her old creepy boss are making earthquakes for terrorists.
This sounds like a real day of crisis.
This is a big day of crisis. So Ray then proceeds to go through the ruined town rescuing people, because he was a member of the International Rescue Team. Meanwhile, he is killing hundreds of people from former Special Forces units. Hundreds. Literally hundreds. With a handgun.
It's a disaster.
Hundreds of them.
Unmitigated disaster.
It's unreal. It's like, because I looked one time, I said, how many people did I kill in this one screen? Because it's a light gun game when you get to the shooting mode, so it's like you shoot. Eventually you kill all the enemies and you move to the next area. I would killed like 30 people in one screen, and then it moved. I'm like, there's not that many people in a Special Forces unit. What is going on? As you go through the town, you Ray goes up, is anybody here? And then the camera randomly shoots in a direction to tell you where the people that need to be rescued are, totally ruining any sense of seek and find. You climb around the rubble, dig them out, and then perform some incredibly dumb minigame, like hosing off their wounds, and magically they're all better. I'm like, okay, I've hosed off their wounds. You're still in a fucking collapsing building during an earthquake / hurricane / terrorist attack. I don't think that constitutes as being rescued.
Yeah, that's the one thing with this game I could not believe. I mean, every single thing that you do in the game is with the Wii remote. Like, and like they, yeah, they felt the need to map everything to like some sort,
yes,
of waggle.
So
it's ridiculous.
The injury treating mode, that people will have brown spots on their body, because apparently injuries are, you got some coal soot on you. So you hose them off with the A button and the pointer. But then to put the bandage on them, which they don't always need bandages, keep that in mind. And if you try to put a bandage on before you clean the wound, they will fucking die. If you want to put the bandage on them, you point the pointer at where you want to put the bandage, and then you turn the control stick's analog stick like it's fucking Mario Party 1, and it wraps a bandage around their wound. It's like, game, stop it. Just stop. Yeah. You are doing things you should not be doing.
I think you're probably being a little overcritical of this part, though, because of having played Trauma Team. A bit.
But it's still incredibly dumb.
The game is waggle overkill. And this is the kind of stuff, honestly, this is the kind of game where I feel like it kind of gave it a bad name. You know? Because it's the epitome of just shoehorning everything into some sort of motion control.
They gave it a correct name, yeah. That's for sure. but see, my favorite part so far is there's this... Rey is running and gunning from terrorists because, I don't know, he was just one of the... Like, 800 SWAT team members stormed this building, but Rey's the motherfucker they're going to hunt down.
He's just a regular guy caught up in a real shitstorm, man.
Yeah, he is. You got to cut him some slack, James.
So all the terrorists have decided that Rey needs to die. So after he flees from their building, they're still hunting him down through the city during an earthquake that's been totally just punched to death by massive earthquakes. So there's a scene in which you are driving a car that you, I guess, found. It's an earthquake. Take whatever the hell you want.
Do you drive it by tilting the Wii remote?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You drive it turns into the controls from Excite Truck.
Okay.
But there's
those were good.
But worse. Oh. Same concept, doesn't work as well. But
hold your praise, Johnny. Let the man finish.
But meanwhile, the city's just going to crap all around you, and there's dudes shooting at you in a giant armored truck who are apparently keeping up with your sports car because fuck, I don't know. And if you don't squeeze the car in exactly the right space at the end of this 7-minute chase scene, you get to start over again because the building fell on you. It's like, oh my sweet. God, stop it! Game! Meanwhile, the entire time, the radio, as in, because apparently they're still making radio transmissions while the city is being destroyed, is coming through the speaker on the Wii remote, telling you about the fact there's been an earthquake, as if nobody in town noticed. There's just so much weird crap going on in this game. I can't even put it into words. At one point, the terrorists hijack a cable car because this town is clearly built based on San Francisco. So you're going around town rescuing people. You climb over the rubble of a building and climb inside of it. Find a guy, drag him out, take him to the street. Everything's great. He's fine. He's to the street now. His leg's all broken to shit. And there's earthquakes and stuff, but it's fine. Oh, and there's a hurricane coming. Don't worry about that. Just leave him outside. He'll be fine. He can't walk, but it's okay. But you do that, then you come down the hill off on the other side, and all of a sudden the game goes into Mad Dog McCree mode, and you think, oh, crap. And a trolley car comes down the hill, flips over, and then terrorists jump out from it. This game has got to be self-aware, because if it's not, I don't want to live in this world anymore. After that scene, we had a 10-minute debate about whether or not this game is self-aware. We're like, does this game know how bad it is? And like, I don't think it does. And my argument was, if it doesn't, I want to die.
It sounds like Disaster Day of Crisis is everything you could have hoped for, James.
Oh, it's the most bizarre experience I've ever had playing a game. I mean,
this is what you wanted, though, right? This is why you imported it.
See, here's the thing. It's not functionally terrible. Like, it works well-ish.
It's just a really bad idea.
It's just hundreds of terrible ideas crammed onto one disc.
From the makers of Xenoblade Chronicles. All right, so we gotta move on, man. I'm sure you could talk about Disaster for an hour. So, Guillaume, you're up next. I don't know how you follow that, but go ahead and try.
No, my game is much more boring. Well, you know, the game isn't that boring, but I mean my story is. Kirby's Blood Bowl. Johnny, did you end up getting it after all, or?
I did. I played it all weekend, and I beat the... Well, I got to the end of level 10, which is sort of the end of the game. It looks like there's some secret boss that I'll never get to.
Yeah, I'm still not there yet. I've been trying as I go to beat the high score and to... I think that's the way to unlock the final levels or whatever they are.
Yes.
And so that's proved to be pretty difficult. But yeah, to start at the beginning, Kirby's Blood Bowl is basically alleyway with sometimes four paddles on all sides of the screen. And Kirby as a ball, but only when you press A at the right time. When the ball hits the paddle, then the ball inflates to like 9 times its size, and it becomes Kirby. And then, I don't know, he just wrecks shit up.
Yeah, it's a very unusual effect. I mean, it is basically Arkanoid, Alleyway, Breakout, whatever you want to call it. But and normally the ball just looks like a ball would in any of those other games.
Right.
But like you said, if you... You know, rather than there aren't that many power-ups. You can occasionally get a copy ability, but they're kind of rare and they're very level specific. Most of the time, the way that you would sort of use a little bit of strategy or deal with like certain blocks that are very difficult to break is you time it so that right when the ball hits the paddle, you push the A button and then the ball turns into Kirby, who bounces around much faster and is harder to control, but he does a lot more damage when he hits the block. So there's that kind of risk reward thing. You wouldn't want to do it every time. You probably couldn't time it so that it did that every time anyway. But when you're kind of up against a wall of special bricks that are, you know, that take way too many hits to get through, then that's when you bust out Kirby and kind of go power hungry on him.
Exactly. Yeah, and you basically only get like one power-up usually per level, one type of power-up. And that's shown to you exactly what it does in a little cinematic scene before you start playing the level. And then, you know, like it becomes pretty clear what you have to do. But then if you lose a life and, you know, you've managed to get the ability, then you lose it for that stage. So that can make things way tougher. And that game has the same problem, basically, that every one of those games has. And it's that it's extremely hard to control. I still don't know exactly how to move Kirby exactly where I want him to go, or the ball where I want it to go. Like, you can put some sort of effect, you know, like if you move the paddle while the ball hits it, then, you know, it's going to go farther to the left or to the right. But you can't really be precise with that. And when sometimes the bricks are like, you know, like 3 pixels wide, that can be really annoying when you've only got one left and you're trying to hit it. And there's no way you can control what you're doing, you know, like it's extremely difficult and kind of frustrating. On the plus side, it doesn't have a time limit. So at least there's that, like you don't have the annoyance of failing to beat a level just because you ran out of time.
Yeah, and usually your score isn't affected by time either. But I agree with you. There are certain levels, and I wonder, did they actually playtest this? Because it just seems like there are blocks in certain positions that is almost impossible to get the ball to ever get to it. Like, and there's just a little bit of randomness in the way that it bounces off of different surfaces. And so sometimes it feels like you're just kind of going in this loop where you're doing basically the same move over and over again, and you're just waiting for the random element to finally move it just one pixel to the right so that it hits that block.
Exactly. And I guess that's where like what I said about like losing the power up comes in, because like sometimes when you do have the power up, it becomes extremely easy to finish a level. But if you don't, that's when you're stuck in that situation where you're just waiting for Kirby to finally hit that one last block that you need.
Yeah. I mean, you're meant to control the angle that he comes off the paddle by, you know, basically by how close to the edge of the paddle you hit the ball. There's something about it being on Game Boy and the graphics are too small and the control is not precise enough to really do that. And I'm wondering if it might have something to do with the emulation on 3DS, where obviously the screen is kind of being blown up and it's being stretched in a funny way. And I've thought about trying to boot it up in the true one-to-one pixel mode. Even though it would be very tiny on the screen, it might actually make it a little bit easier to control, because at least the breakdown of the geometry on the paddle of where you would hit it to get certain angles, at least it would be consistent from one side to the other of the paddle. That's a tortured explanation, but I think it's a case where I think the stretching of the graphics might actually be affecting how the game plays.
Yeah, maybe, but I'm not sure if like where the ball hits the paddle is really what affects where the ball goes. I think that the fact that you're moving the paddle when the ball hits it determines more where the ball goes.
It's like you're putting spin on the ball, basically.
Yeah, kind of, but without spin.
I didn't even try that, because in these games, I usually try to make sure that I'm not moving the paddle when I hit the ball, because then I don't want to overshoot it or undershoot it. So I always try to get it in the right place before and just make sure that I hit it on the right place. So I need to try that. I'll have to test that out and see if you know, maybe I'm just doing it wrong.
And yeah, like there's not much else I have to say about the game, except that it kind of makes me anxious about Kirby's Pinball Land, because I have very good memories of that game. Like, it's kind of the ancestor of Pokemon Pinball and Metroid Pinball. The physics, or the lack of physics, in Kirby Block Ball kind of, you know, like I wonder if Kirby's Pinball Land still holds up, or if it's still going to be that same annoying, like, okay, like the... You can't really tell where you're sending the ball, because it's just not precise enough. It's just not there's something about the size of the screen and the, yeah, like the primitive physics that, that just don't allow you to have that kind of control.
Yeah, same goes for like Gator's Revenge, because I think that was made by HAL as well.
Yeah, I've never played that.
Yeah, very much loved early Game Boy pinball game, and I don't have much experience with it, but I wonder if we would have the same reaction to it. I mean, I thought Kirby's Block Ball is very creative and a very unusual, interesting spin on the sort of Arkanoid genre. And, you know, I think the parts where you're controlling paddles that are on the sides or on the ceiling are really cool and sort of give it a complexity that I wasn't expecting, especially from a Kirby game. And overall, I would say this is probably one of the more difficult games with the Kirby brand that I've ever played. Not always in a satisfying way, because there is some frustration like you described, but it certainly takes some skill to get through it.
All right, so I've been playing that, and I've also been playing this game, this Mario game that I didn't know existed until recently.
Super Mario World.
Yeah, a complete surprise. Never came here in Canada.
What?
Silly Americans.
It's All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers, a kind of ROM hack that Miyamoto and his team themselves have made back in the Super Mario days, like in the few months that after the release of the original game, that they made as a promotional vehicle for like this radio show.
Nice.
And it's absolutely like, it's just a ROM hack basically, with the different enemies replaced by faces of those radio show hosts. And like the mushroom retainers, the toads at the end of each castle are all, you know, a different personality. And I don't know, like it seems to use the assets of the Lost Levels, and the like they have that look, you know, like the slightly differently drawn like mushrooms and stuff.
They replaced the mushrooms with like microphones, didn't they?
Yeah.
Some things are replaced with logos from various Fuji TV properties, I think.
Indeed. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's basically all there is to it.
But are the level designs the same?
I've never played Super Mario Brothers Versus, but I think it might be based on that, like the arcade game.
I thought it was the Lost Levels.
Well, it might be. Like, you do have the possibility to play with, like, Mario and Luigi, and they've got different physics and stuff, different inertia. But there's no wind. There's no, you know, poisonous mushrooms. I mean, it starts out and it seems to be the levels from the first game. So I was thinking maybe like it's just like a reconversion of the arcade game.
I know it was given away as like a prize. It was,
right.
Like, it was like a raffle prize or something like that. So
in what form was it? Was it actually?
It was a Famicom disc system.
Ah, disc system. Okay.
So it's a disc system game that existed primarily to be given out as a exclusively to be given out as a prize. So I assume copies of this game are worth a crap ton of money.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. No wonder it was on disc, because it would have been one of the rarest cartridges ever if it was a cartridge. I mean, even as a disc, it would be worth a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the trouble with those disc games is the discs were rewritable, and so sometimes people got these really rare disc games and then got tired of playing them and went to the grocery store and overwrote them with Zelda or something. So they're even really, really hard to get a hold of now. Plus, a working disc system is very hard to get now, because those things were made of paper, practically. So even if you have a rare disc game, it's hard to actually find a system that can play it.
Right. I got to admit, I did not find this system to play this on. Yeah, sorry.
Shame on you. Well, you are from the streets, Guillaume. We've already established that. Your morals are already questionable.
Great. So here's the explanation. It's Super Mario Brothers, the original. Super Mario Brothers 2, a.k.a. The Lost Levels. And stuff from Versus Super Mario Brothers, the arcade game. So we were both right.
Wow.
It's a weird mix of levels, apparently. Mm.
Yeah. No, like it starts out like the first game, and then it moves to levels that are almost impossible. For instance, like
those would be the Lost Levels. Yes.
Yeah. Like Dick moves, like instead of like the usual stair to get to the flagpole, you get like basically two tiles, one halfway and, you know, one at the top. Yeah. And
God.
Yeah. I love the Lost Levels, because it's just like Miyamoto. It's just like the team that made it just kept going, fuck you, the whole game.
Yeah, pretty
much. I don't know that Miyamoto was all that involved with the Lost Levels, actually. I think he kind of oversaw it on some supervisor level.
It was another team that did it. But yeah, they basically just constantly give you the middle finger the entire time you're playing it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's delightful.
Anyway, I just want to quickly say that while the game's interest is kind of limited, to be honest, you know, when I said the title, if people thought like, wow, this guy is trying way too hard, they're probably right. Because I learned about this game from this book called The History of Mario that I bought a couple of months ago when I learned that I was perhaps going to be on this podcast.
Nice.
Because at
first... Studying up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Stop that.
That's cute.
You're making us look good bad.
Well, no, but, you know, like, the thing is, like, most of my Nintendo information came from listening to Radio for Nintendo.
Most of my Nintendo information came from being on it.
Snakes eating its own tail.
Scary.
So, you know, when I learned that I was going to be on it, then I thought, like, holy shit, I got to step it up.
We just make up half the shit as we go along anyway.
I mean, I'm trying to step my shit down. That's the irony of this for me. I'm trying less.
But yeah, like the History of Mario is this book from Pix and Love Publishing, which is actually this French company, and they've started recently putting out their books in English. And I don't remember where I heard about them, but they were certainly very, you know, highly praised by whoever. And
Jesus.
Guys on the internet?
No, well, you know, like various podcasts I listen to, I suppose. And no, it's like it's pretty interesting. They've got like the History of Mario, the History of Nintendo in several volumes, the first of which covers basically Nintendo's toys.
Nice.
And then the second volume is all the Game & Watch games. And volume 3 I still haven't gotten to, but it's all Famicom. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Gonna write a book about Game & Watch ball.
Someone did it and people bought it. So
are these books heavy on pictures or?
Well, I still haven't quite gotten to the History of Nintendo, which is written by a different guy. It's very, you know, like color pictures and everything, and it seems to describe basically all of the games and who designed them, usually Gunpei Yokoi, and you know, stuff like that. The History of Mario is more of a, you know, an essay, I guess, and it seems to be cribbing pretty much from Stephen Kent. Although it does have some more references and sources, including Nintendo World Report, actually.
Whoa!
Some interview, you know, translated from the Japanese that you guys posted in, you know, 2001.
Nice.
Like, the guy seems to be, like, his goal seemed to be to explain exactly why Mario became Nintendo's mascot, which is not really a question I had been asking myself, but maybe I should have, because...
Maybe you should!
No, but, like, I got into Nintendo, and Super Mario Brothers was already a thing, right? But
right.
Nintendo became one of the big players when Donkey Kong came out, and at that time, Mario didn't even have a name, and Donkey Kong was basically the star. You know, I had played Mario Brothers, and I had found it kind of crummy, you know, and stuff like that, so it does explain kind of the logic, or, like, it does explain the origins of Mario and how he became the mascot, and I don't know, it's pretty interesting, because I wasn't really aware of what, you know, was going on behind the scenes at that time, even if I was playing video games. And yeah, like, it does explain why the last levels never came out in America, and...
Play it, you'll know why. You don't have to ask any more questions.
No, but who made the decisions and everything.
Yeah.
So, no, it's pretty interesting.
That sounds really cool. I've never even heard of it before. I'm going to have to check it out. I need to study up a little myself.
Here's the bad news, though. You know, I said these guys are French. Their books are available in English, except that pretty much, like, only in the UK. You have to import them. You know, you can't find them on Amazon.com. And I just checked the price, and apparently it's like $40 US.
I'm not paying for those extra U's, damn it.
For one, you know, one volume of the History of Nintendo. So I don't Jeez. Know. I'll try to make, you know, like to sum up what I've read.
Why don't you just scan the whole thing into a PDF for us?
And then translate,
exactly,
and then translate it into English.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what I've been doing. And I promise I won't try so hard next time.
It's appreciated.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, so Guy, you haven't read Game Over yet, have you?
Yeah, I'm going to move on to that at some point.
Game Over is really good. It's a tale of intrigue for the most part. So it's kind of a ripping yarn. Well, I always recommend Chris Kohler's book Power Up. Unfortunately, it's been out of print for a while. So, John, you're up next.
Yeah. Speaking of Mario games, I've actually, much like you, Johnny, the recent patch to Mario Kart 7 has sparked a renewed interest in the title for me. So now I've kind of come back to it, and I've finally actually started to play through it. And, you know, I've gone through 50cc. So, you know, kind of, you know, my thoughts, I mean, you know, it's Mario Kart, really doesn't do anything, doesn't really stray too far from the old formula, but I like the mix of tracks. You know, a lot of them, actually, a lot of the tracks are from some of the older titles that I haven't played in forever, like some of the, like the DS titles.
Yeah, real old, John, the DS games.
Well, GameCube is what I was going to say next, but older titles that I haven't played for a while, for at least a couple of years. Actually, the GameCube title, I don't think I ever owned it.
Well, it's the best one. You're missing out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, which surprises me, but I think there was definitely a time period with this series where I just kind of drifted away from it, and I just really stopped playing it or caring about it much.
If you didn't have a group of people to play it with in a social setting, it really wasn't worth buying, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there was... I played it a lot on the N64. I loved that game so much, Mario Kart 64, but... After that, you know, GameCube, I really didn't care too much about it. Yeah, I mean, there's up to this point, there's always been kind of something that kept me away from it. Until Mario Kart Wii, which had a competent online. I've played the heck out of that game, and I really loved it. And really, Mario Kart Wii brought me back to the series. So I was really looking forward to Mario Kart 7. And so far, I haven't played it online much, but, you know, that's one of those things that was kind of keeping me away was the fact that, you know, there were these exploits and stuff. And just the fact that they can patch that stuff now, so it becomes, you know, enough of a problem. You know, they can actually address it now. That really, you know, kind of bolsters my confidence in the title. So, yeah, I mean, probably the only things that I kind of didn't like, I was underwhelmed by the fact that they have two rainbow roads, because I saw, you know, because I got, you know, near the end, and I was like, oh, cool, you know, it's kind of weird. Rainbow Road is, I think it's in, what is it, Star Cup?
Yeah. But they're, I mean, the two versions are extremely different from
each other.
Well,
John, yeah, you'll be glad to hear that the Wii U Mario Kart is going to be called Mario Kart Rainbow Road with a U.
but yeah, so like the thing is, I was unimpressed by the Super NES Rainbow Road, because I was thinking, oh man, it's going to be so hard, you know, because Rainbow Road's typically one of the hardest tracks, if not the hardest track in every Mario Kart game. And I just felt that the Super NES Rainbow Road, it was so easy. I felt like you could just power glide through the entire thing if you wanted to. Power slide, I should say. Like, you could just slide through the whole thing. I felt like, you know, the turns were really... I mean, the track is really wide. The turns were really broad. And, I mean, I just felt it was too easy to be in there, really. I felt it was just kind of a waste. I feel like there's a couple of tracks in there that I really could have done without.
Yeah, but maybe you were just not going fast enough.
Yeah, John! Slow old man!
Hey, man.
On 50cc, that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
Get your walker, I mean, out. God.
But that's the thing. I mean, to me, it's, yeah, of course you're going to kill it, right? Because, you know, it's the easiest setting of the game. But still, the track design isn't exactly inspired. I mean, it's a very basic track.
It is inspired by the Super Nintendo game.
Yeah. It's just, the thing is, I felt that they could have done some more with it to maybe...
It is highly inspired.
Maybe I have low expectations, but I thought they did, you know, I didn't know, but seriously, I didn't expect them to actually have, like, the ripple effect on the Rainbow Road. Like, I thought that was pretty cool. That's something that was not in the SNES version. And you can actually, you know, like, gain speed, take boosts off those ripples. I don't know, like, you can have some strategy there.
RFN episode, whatever this is, maybe I have low expectations.
Okay, I do have low expectations. I think we've established that.
RFN, I do have low expectations.
Yeah, James, you should listen to last week's episode.
Oh.
Yeah, I was also pretty unimpressed by Airship Fortress as well. I just don't think that track is anything special.
I agree with you. But
it's very, very boring.
I think for Rainbow Road, it comes down to, for one thing, the handling has changed so much since the Super Nintendo game, mm-hmm. that the characters were so much more slippery in the original, and they just, you know, because they stick to the track better and you have better grip for the most part, it's just a lot easier to stay on the track, and that was always what made the original hard. The other thing is, there's a lot of play in the way retro studios brought these old Mario Kart tracks into Mario Kart 7. And a lot of them, I feel like, are better for the change that they made. They add boost pads, and that, you know, you can use the new items, and they, There are places where you can go off and use the hang glider that you could obviously never do in the old versions. But with Rainbow Road, I think they've actually made the track a good bit wider relative to your character than it was in the Super Nintendo version. And that's mm-hmm. another reason that it makes it just a lot easier to stay on the track. On the other hand, the new Rainbow Road for 7 is, I think, almost impossible to stay on the track for more than about 10 seconds at a time. So it kind of balances out.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. You have to be really, really careful on that one. I didn't know how I felt about, you know, I don't know. They threw in several tracks where, you know, you don't actually do laps. You just do kind of checkpoints.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how I felt about that. It's,
I like them.
I like the lap. I like laps. What can I say? I like to run laps.
No European rally crap for you.
Laps make it easier to memorize the track layout and to find the shortcuts and stuff like that. And one reason I like the point to point is that, you know, because they are much, much longer and there's no repetition in there, it feels like it's, those tracks are always more surprising to me because I always go through this one part that I didn't pay as much attention to the last time I played it. And you only go through it once every time you do the track. And so they just always feel kind of fresher and more exciting and more interesting to me. And I feel like the way I'm playing is more improvisational on those levels than it is on the ones with laps.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does allow them to cram more stuff into the concept of the lap, right? Because they have so much more to work with, so much, they don't have to, you know, there won't be anything repeating at all. So they don't have to worry
about it. Also, they don't have to worry about closure, you know, like when you're in a lap, the track has to loop back to itself at some point. So there's a sort of a predictable number of, you know, the left turns have to equal the right turns and, you know, stuff like that. Eventually, I'm going to have to come back around so that I'm facing the way I was when I started the track. And so the point-to-point ones feel more unpredictable to me. There's a lot fewer rules as to how those have to, you know, how they have to go.
Yeah. You know, for me, I like kind of like the challenge of doing a particularly, you know, hard part of the track three times in a row. Like, can you pull it off three times in a row sort of thing? Mm. So that's probably what I like a bit more about the lap concept. But it's good to see that they're actually, you know, mixing it up. So in terms of you know, the tracks that they've added in here, I really liked all the ones, you know, since I'm a fan of the Wii game, I really liked all the tracks that they have in here from the Wii. Mushroom Gorge, Coconut Mall, Maple Tree Way, and Koopa Cape. So you know, overall I would say I like the tracks that they have in there in general, but I feel like there's a couple there that were kind of underwhelming.
Sure.
So yeah, like I said, I haven't tried online yet, so that'll be kind of interesting. I've played a handful of games, but not enough to really have any opinion on it yet. But yeah, you know, the blue shell still screws you over.
No kidding. Yeah.
I've joined, I threw my name into the hat. I think I bumped the thread. The thread was about 50 years old in our forums, the Mario Kart 7 communities.
Yeah, if you're listening and you haven't joined the NWR community within Mario Kart 7, you should definitely do that because it makes it a lot easier to find a game with good people.
Yep.
And, you know, whenever we do like a community night where we all sort of sign on at the same time and play, you know, we announce those on the website. If you're in the community, that's the way you find us. So you can play with staff members, play with other readers and listeners of the website, and that's definitely a thing that you should do while you're thinking about it.
Yep. So, you know, once I go online, I'll definitely be in those rooms. So.
Me too. Okay. I will wrap up new business. And I've got a game called Cloudberry Kingdom. I heard about this from a listener, Sarek, who sort of posted to me on Twitter about it. And then I think I read the article on NWR. And that's what I was like, oh, yeah, I remember he mentioned that. And I never went to go look at it. And so I went to check it out, and it's a 2D platformer, very old school. It's deliberately and unabashedly inspired by the Super Mario Brothers games. The style of platforming is very much in that vein. It kind of has that pace to it. The character has that kind of a jump, and the obstacles that they put in the 2D platformer are, a lot of them are sort of based on things from the Super Mario series. So obviously this is something that Nintendo fans, you know, would recognize and would probably feel at home with. But the other really interesting thing, and I didn't know about this till I read the article on our site, but this game is coming to Wii U as a download title. And, the really crazy thing, I can't believe this happened. It's also coming to Steam. And it's on Kickstarter. Now, the Kickstarter will be over by the time you hear this, so cross your fingers and hope that it pass. It's about 85% right now. So there's a good chance that it's going to come through here in the last couple of days. And I've put in my part to it, but mainly because I wanted to get the beta and talk to you guys about it. So if you did the Kickstarter thing and you went up to, I don't know, at least $15, you got a beta key where you could play it on Steam. And that's why I wanted to do it. But the crazy thing is you also get, of course, a copy of the game when it comes out sometime, you know, in a few months from now. But when you do that, you can choose whether to get it on Steam or Wii U. And the developer of this, who's like a very small team, you know, like 5 or 6 people, they contacted Nintendo and got permission from Nintendo to promise to their Kickstarter supporters the option for downloading the Wii U version when it's ready as a reward for supporting the Kickstarter. And I thought this was really, really crazy because, for one thing, it means Nintendo's talking to this very small development team about making digital games for Wii U.
Right.
Now, this is the first time I've really heard of any developer doing that. I'm sure it's been happening behind the scenes, but you haven't really been hearing about it. It tells me that Nintendo is willing to go along with them giving away a bunch of codes to the Wii U version to people.
Right.
That's kind of interesting. That's been difficult on some of the past digital platforms.
Nintendo might still get their cut. They might still have to pay the Nintendo royalty fee or whatever.
But, yeah, I guess so.
Beyond that, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, this is all before the platform for the Wii U is even unveiled.
Exactly. So this is almost like a preview of the kind of game you might get as a download for Wii U. And to be quite honest, I'm really, really excited for this game, especially having now played the beta on Steam, spent a couple hours tooling around in it. It's really fun. It's really, really exciting. And the great thing about it is I'm hoping that this is going to be a very early Wii U game. Right now, they're expecting at least the Steam version to be done around September. Yep. So I'm hoping that will give them the opportunity to wrap up the Wii U version in time for launch this fall. But this is exactly the kind of game. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago with Greg about the kinds of games that we would want to have around launch for a new system. Being realistic, what kind of game would be satisfying to you to have as a launch title? Well, Cloudberry Kingdom is a procedurally generated infinite 2D platformer.
Yep.
Tell me that is not something you would love to have at launch. You can pay $15 for it and have a game that literally never ends and is different every single time you play it and plays like Mario.
But so everybody with the BFA has no idea what you just said. It's random level generator there.
It's random, but here's the crazy thing, okay? So obviously they've got all these construction pieces that they're making levels out of, okay?
Right.
But the levels are made instantaneously. There's no loading time or anything like that on Steam. And the levels are all very short. It plays almost like a WarioWare platformer. So you're running through the levels and almost none of them take more than 5 seconds if you do a clean run through it. Okay. So it's very, very fast paced. And the amazing thing to me is that they're able to randomly generate these levels that are all, number one, completable. So they're putting these platforms and obstacles together in such a way that there is a way to get through it. And a lot of times the way to get through it is fairly easy to see. It's just not always easy to do, not to pull off.
But in some cases, it's not even easy to see. Like, I've seen the trailer, and some of the levels look impossible. Like,
those are really extreme examples. I mean, I've played the game for a couple of hours. I play through literally hundreds of levels in this game. I haven't seen anything that looks like the stuff in that trailer. So that they're just trying to show you, like, the absolute extreme end of what could show up in these levels. But cut that in about half. And you get a level that is still very intimidating. It looks like something out of Super Meat Boy, but it's still possible to get through it. And I've gotten through some levels that initially looked totally ridiculous. But the game, the mechanics are just really airtight. It's very, very solid 2D platforming physics and controls. And again, the amazing thing to me is that you can have a random level generator that creates levels that are interesting and satisfying to play through, but to a fault, every single one that I've played through, I felt almost immediately there is a way to get through this. And I don't know exactly how they've pulled that off. The other crazy thing is there's these, they call them coins, but they look like blue rupees from Legend of Zelda. And they're the collectibles. They're the things that you can optionally get as you play through the level. And these are also placed in all these kind of locations that are a little bit out of the way, but you can probably pick them up on your way through the level. And the way that they're placed, it might look kind of random when the level first boots up, but as you play through it, you can see that these coins are placed in locations that really make sense for the path. And in some cases, they can actually be sort of clues to help you figure out how to pick through this little 2D platforming level. Very, very intelligently done. And I'm kind of amazed that it's not, that these levels aren't being put together by a person. And that is what's so exciting. It's not just a random level generator, because you think a randomly generated 2D platformer sounds awful. It sounds like boring levels. It sounds like levels that are impossible to complete. It sounds like the same crap over and over again. And I haven't felt any of that while playing this.
Now, what my guess is that it's not entirely random, that certain components of levels are probably preordained, as it were.
I think they probably have some sort of rules engine.
Yeah, yes. And that rules engine may be very detailed. It may be down to, like...
I'm thinking that it is.
These five pieces go together in this order.
Well, but the thing is, you don't see the patterns. Like, it feels like if that's the way it's being done, it feels like if it's done by these kind of chunks of pieces of levels that are being arranged, that they would sort, you know, the designers would sort of find certain combinations that work really well and would go back to those over and over and over again. And you don't get that sense when you play it.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have put together hundreds of these patterns. I mean,
well, maybe so. And maybe that's what they've done. Yeah, maybe they've just, you know, it's like a random number seed. It's not actually random. It's just the set is so large that you could never actually recognize the pattern with your human brain.
And the stage could add extra accoutrement to the base of it. And you could just say, all right, but you can't put any platform obstacles in this space because you will F with the player. Mm-hmm. But you could, I mean, there could be multiple pieces that they have together that they match up. They have hundreds of them.
Well, James, I think you're going to be captivated by Cloudberry Kingdom because it does all that stuff on a really crazy level. It's really fun to play. Here's the thing. It sounds complicated, but when you look at it, you will know how to play it. It's a very, very simple kind of game. It's a game that everyone listening to this knows how to play and will pick up very quickly. And it's really fun. Really, really fun. There's also a lot of crazy, like, superpowers that your character can have in certain modes that totally change the physics and the way that the levels are constructed.
So stylistically, as I'm looking at it, it looks heavily inspired by the DS game coming out for it, the Adventure Time series.
I wouldn't look too much into the art style because part of the reason they want to do a Kickstarter is to hire an art and animation team.
Oh, but I like the style it has now. It looks cool.
That's the thing. It doesn't look that bad. I mean, it looks kind of like a Flash game, but not in a bad way. It looks like, you know, it's very functional artwork. It's certainly not really crazy pretty or anything like that, but it certainly doesn't look terrible, but I think they want to make this feel like a really professional game. You know, they want to go all the way with it, and especially, you know, it's only announced for Steam and Wii U. So, you know, obviously they're Nintendo fans, and
their website does mention that they're working to get it on XBLA as well.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. I hadn't heard that. That's probably a much more complicated process with all the rules Microsoft has. But I assume that they have Wii U development kits, or they wouldn't have announced that version already. And I think Nintendo would be very wise to have a version of this running, if not on a Wii U, then at least running on a PC hooked up to a tablet controller. So you can actually play it with the Wii U controller, just so people start associating it with Wii U, because it is awesome.
I wonder if the reason they've been allowed to do this is Nintendo went through and looked at all the dev kits and saw whose games looked decent enough that they could spotlight them.
Yeah, I mean, if there's like an eShop section of Nintendo's booth where they're going to preview a few digital games for Wii U, this should be one of them. It's really good. But anyway, I can at least say before we go into E3, I've played a real Wii U game. Not on the Wii U, but it will be a real Wii U game, and I think it's exactly what the platform needs in the early days. So, very, very cool stuff, and I think it's something you guys should look forward to. And hopefully, by the time you hear this, we'll know if the Kickstarter worked or not. But, man, I really hope so. So, that's going to wrap up new business. We're going to come back in a little bit with our E3 2012 preview. Look forward to it.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We have a review of Snake Oi Deluxe by Alex Kulafi. which is a DSiWare game. It's a mixture of Arkanoid and Snake. Also, it sucks. Alex Gloff gave us another review for Battleship for the 3DS, which he said apparently Super Battleship 2 was already taken, which is sad, because that means it's not a game where we can make fun of Battleship the movie, which also sucks.
We've got a feature, the Japan eShop Roundup by Danny Bivens, another Kirby game, a video about Guild 01, and Itsunomatarubi evolves, kinda, apparently into Japanese idols wrestling in a pool.
Next up, we've got a preview for Diamond Trust of London on the DS by Carmine Red. He says this game is a tightly wound bundle of game theory, eclectic soundscapes, and smuggled blood diamonds. It's Diamond Smuggler of the game. This is the game that's been on Kickstarter. This guy's trying to make enough money to manufacture cartridges for it. That's pretty cool. You should check it out if you like board games. It sounds like it's very much that, and a single card download.
Blood Diamonds? I love Blood Diamonds.
And from my main homeboy, Danny Bivens, Danny Bell Bivens DeVoe, we have a blog, the Club Nintendo Japan Polo Shirt, aka the reward you'll never get. He taunts us with shirts that we can't have. What a jerk. And we also have a review for Chronicles of Vampires by Zach Miller. It's for DSiWare. He says, his Spot the Differences game that Zach promises is worse, quote-unquote, worse than Homie's Rollers.
It's Homie Rollers.
Homie Rollers.
Not Homie's. Homie Rollers.
Sorry, I added an extra Z because fuck. Really?
Well, you could never really have enough extra Zs, that's for sure. Homie Rollers, a classic game if you don't believe us.
Go read Zach's review.
Yeah.
Yes, well, it probably goes without saying, but you definitely want to check out Nintendo World Report every day for the next few weeks and until the end of time to get the latest E3, pre-E3 news, and then, of course, actual E3 coverage coming up very soon. So basically, head over there right now, join the forums, check out the podcasts, and read the front page every day. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Electronic Entertainment Expo 2012. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. It's time for our annual preview. I got the gang here, and as we record this, it's less than 2 weeks away. By the time you hear it, E3 will be about a week away, probably. Maybe even less if you're slow to the punch. And we've been doing this for a few years. We kind of give our previews. We talk about what we want to see, what we hope to see, what we expect to see, and what we pray we will see from Nintendo at E3. And this is a big year. I mean, for the first time since before this podcast started, Nintendo is getting ready to launch a new console. And they're getting ready to blow it out at the show. In fact, the original Wii unveiling, not unveiling because they'd shown it the year before, but the first time that Wii was shown with playable games and real announcements and a really big to-do about it was at E3 2006. And the conversations that spawned out of that are part of the reason that this podcast exists. It was started right after E3 2006. So this really is a big, momentous time for all Nintendo fans and for the company, of course, and for us. And there's a lot to cover here. And in his true generous spirit, our old friend Greg Leahy actually put together some notes for us. I didn't ask him to do so. I was going to do it myself, and he offered to go ahead. Actually, he didn't offer. He just went ahead and did it anyway and then said, here, you can use these if you want. You don't have to. And I said, well, of course I'm going to use them. You already made them. So anyway, thank you, Greg. Did an amazing job, of course, as always. And we're going to go through his little outline for the preview as fast as we can. We got a lot of ground to cover, and we've got some notes of our own here, and we're going to talk about all the different things that are about to happen, the exciting things that are about to happen to Nintendo. Of course, our staff will be at E3 this year covering Nintendo. We've got about a dozen people. Guillaume and I will be there. John and James will not. Unfortunately, they'll be covering it for the home team, which is very important.
Yep.
And we are going to all tag up and kill this show like we have for a very long time, since the year 2000, actually, even before I was on staff. So we always have kick-ass E3 coverage. I'm sure this year will be no different, and you'll definitely want to check the website every day. But
definitely watch our YouTube video feed, because we produce a lot of original videos.
That's right.
Probably more than probably more than any site you'll see pertaining to Nintendo content.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We'll have a ton. We'll have, I'm sure, with Jared on board, we will have video of virtually every game for Wii U, Wii, 3DS, and DS that is at the show. He is very, very thorough and very quick about putting things up. So you'll definitely want to check that out. We will probably have podcasts every day, not only from the team that is at the show, but also from the home team. I think we're going to have some connectivity stuff going on. We'll definitely have some RFN stuff with Guillaume and I at the show, and we'll bring in all kinds of other people who are there as well. And we're going to talk about the things we've been playing and things that we've been seeing. So it's going to be really exciting. But as a preview, let's start off with 3DS. Greg notes that it is now the Nintendo's fastest ever selling portable worldwide as of January. Also notes that Iwata has expressed some dissatisfaction with the performance of 3DS in Western markets. And of course, as we know, support from Western publishers and Western developers has been very sparse up to this point, and the games they put out have not been very successful for the most part. So I think Nintendo does have a lot to prove, even though 3DS is on fairly solid footing after a rough first year. There's a lot more to be done, and certainly if they want to make it big in the Western market, they've got a lot more to do. In terms of first-party software, we've got, of course, new Super Mario Bros. 2 coming out in August. Wii U is definitely going to get a lot of the attention over the holidays, but I'm sure Nintendo is not going to give up their holiday domination in the handheld space. So let's talk about the games we think they're going to be lining up for the fall and the winter this year from 3DS. Some we may know about already, and some may be surprises from E3. What do you guys think? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I mean, Luigi's Mansion 2 obviously is going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I played it. It had better be.
I agree.
I'm excited about that game, but just how long it's been, it's sort of fallen out of my consciousness. I mean, really, the only reason I remember it's a thing is because occasionally it pops into my head. It's not, I'm not actively after it anymore, and I really hope they show the game off in a way that makes me actively lust for it, like I did when we first saw it last year.
I thought it was one of the best 3DS games at the show
last
year.
It was a really solid demo. Once you got the controls down, because it does play slightly differently than the GameCube games. If you came into it expecting it to play like that, you could be a little surprised.
But you know, the CirclePad Pro this year, it could certainly make it control a lot more like the GameCube original if they want to.
Yeah, but you know, I was quite happy with how it controlled. I think they simplified it a little bit for the handheld experience. I mean, I think it
looked awesome.
It did. It looked really awesome. It made really good use of the particle effects, which we hadn't seen on the 3DS up to that point.
But they keep talking about how they want to really pack it out with a lot of content. Like, they want there to be a lot of different mansions, hundreds of ghosts and stuff. And maybe that's why it's been taking so long.
I think there's five dungeons or mansions. I think they originally announced that at E3 last year. Hmm. I mean, I'm excited for that game, obviously. In terms of what they could have in the chute ready to go, it's unlikely they've got a Pokemon title coming out, because they've got Pokemon's Ambition that's coming out right now, actually.
That's Pokemon Conquest. Yeah, Black and White 2 will be out, so they're not going to have any Pokemon for 3DS.
I mean they're set on the Pokemon train on the DS, which is kind of... I mean, I understand why they're doing it, but at this point, I would really like to see them start shifting gears. Not necessarily a core game, but I don't even think there's going to be a major spinoff title, because they've got two of them that came out recently.
Right. Well, also, I don't think Nintendo has ever announced a Pokemon game at E3. It's just it's such a Japan-centric, and they, you know, and there are other companies involved in announcing Pokemon games, so.
Sure. No, but like I said, I don't think that's going to happen, so that's fine. In terms of what else they can put out, I mean, we already know there's another Mario game coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, I guess.
We're so down on Mario on this podcast lately.
I'm looking forward to playing it. I want to see if it feels different, you know, if it looks different. I'm very curious. I want that game to impress me.
It had better be different, substantially.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got the Paper Mario, which we still don't know a whole hell of a lot about.
Yeah.
I tell you, I don't think Paper Mario is coming out this year. I don't know that it'll even be at E3.
Yeah, it strikes me as like some project that's probably just been completely rebooted or something.
I think it'll be there, because, I mean, it's been at two of them now. At this point, a 3DS game that's been at two E3s is bizarro land crazy. Mm-hmm.
I think Intelligent Systems shifted their focus to the Fire Emblem game, which was never shown at E3. And that's out now in Japan, and it's coming out fairly soon in America, probably.
So that'll probably be at E3, but just for the Western market
right.
to see it.
But I think Paper Mario just got put on the back burner for a while. I still think they're making it, but they decided that it wasn't feasible to get it done early in the cycle, and so they decided to take their time and do it right. it may show up at E3, but again, I don't think it's actually coming out this year, and so Nintendo may decide to hold off on it for a while.
And then obviously we have Animal Crossing, which is coming into its final state at this point. So I imagine we'll get to hear quite a bit about that. Although they've pretty much given us the rundown of how that game works. I mean, we basically know the core mechanics. I'd imagine we'll probably hear, you know, about how the online stuff works and how the other stuff being the mayor can do for you, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, beyond that, what we don't know anything about, games they haven't announced. Well, we've just sort of run through the whole gamut of their franchises because, I mean, for God's sakes, they put out a Kid Icarus game, unless you're talking Metroid or Zelda, which are the only franchises that they haven't 3DS'd yet. I mean, obviously we had the 3DS, the Zelda download game, but that doesn't really count. So, I mean, if you're thinking core franchise, that's really the options you've got left.
Yeah.
Are Metroid and Zelda. And the question is, do you think Aider's a Metroid game ready? And probably not.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a Zelda game that they could be showing?
Yes.
Maybe.
I mean, they could at least show maybe a concept of it.
Hard yes, or yes, there could be one.
No, like, it's one of my big predictions, actually. I think Nintendo is going to show a first glimpse. It may be a very minor glimpse, but they will show some preview of a new Zelda game for 3DS, an original Zelda game.
So, see, that's kind of where I'm leaning, but at the same time, I don't know that they've shown 3DS or shown handheld Zelda games before they come out. I mean, like, a year before the year they come out. Like, usually it seems like they show them the same year they're going to come out. Like, the DS games. They showed them at the E3 before they came out.
Yeah, but the development cycles on those games are shorter than they would be for 3DS.
Well, I mean, we don't know how long this game's been in development either. I mean, this game could have started development as soon as they finished off the boat one.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's sort of the next shoe to drop. It's, you know, we've had, you know, Mario. We've had Mario Kart, so...
We've had Mario. We've had Mario again.
Yep.
We've had Mario Kart.
Yeah, we're going to have Mario a third time. And so...
We've had your Mario Sports stuff, so Camelot's shot. They're not doing anything, so don't think Golden Sun.
Nope.
We have Animal Crossing. We have Luigi's Mansion, if you want to go that crazy. We have Kid Fucking Icarus, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you have left, really? I mean...
Brawl, maybe?
No, Brawl's not nearly ready to show.
No, I wonder if they may give some kind of tease on it, though. Mm. I mean, we know there's a 3DS Brawl.
Yep.
I mean, that's... It's interesting, because I don't know when they started development on it. I mean, maybe they started development on it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't... I think that game is like exists on napkins right now.
Yeah.
I just don't see them... I mean, if they showed anything of Smash Brothers, it would have to be some kind of like CG trailer that they just kind of concepted.
They are not above that, as we are aware.
They're not above that, but I just don't... It's that game is so far away, it's not really Nintendo's style to show it this early.
No, but they've done that with Brawls before, or with Smash Brothers before.
They did that with Brawl, but that game also got delayed pretty heavily from when they originally expected it to come out.
I mean, Sakurai has obviously been busy.
Well, yeah. I just don't think Smash Brothers is coming out until 2014. So yeah. I think this is way too early to show it.
See, I would say 2013, to be honest, because I think it would be a mistake for them to let the Wii U one sit that long.
It's just the way it is. I mean...
Regardless, I mean, that's a possibility. But if we're talking core franchises, they've kind of delivered them all already, except for Zelda and Metroid. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you're just predicting that they always show a core franchise for one of their systems, well, there's the Mario game, so maybe they feel like that covers them. But if not, then that's what's left.
What do you think, Guillaume? Are you expecting Zelda, anything else for 3DS that's really kind of brand new?
I haven't been thinking about the 3DS very much for the C3.
I hate you, 3DS.
But I'm kind of wondering what Skip is working on. Like, I'm looking forward to the smaller titles. And, they've got to be working, you know, hard on Captain Rainbow 2 or something. So,
oh God, they're not. I'll tell you, they're not working hard on that one. There's a void for a puzzle game, I guess. If Nintendo feels like they need to have a hard cartridge released puzzle game,
well, they've already done Tetris Axis, but that did not go over so well.
Yeah,
surely they're going to show like some sort of follow up to the art style line. No,
I don't know about surely. I mean, the other thing is, even if that exists, you know, even if Skip is working on some, you know, really cool new download titles and. That kind of stuff is difficult to show off at E3. The smaller games get lost really easily, and E3 is not really the correct event to show off a lot of smaller games. Now, I'm always looking for them because they are out there, but they are very easily overlooked at E3.
No, and because because E3 is a giant orgy of light and sound.
Yes. I mean, so you want a small room where you can talk to a developer who is really knowledgeable about these small games, and it's just it's hard to do that at E3.
Yeah,
so
games like that tend to get lost in Nintendo's booth. They'll be on, you know, one 3DS in a corner and nobody looks at it.
Exactly. And like our site is the only place you will read about it.
Mm. Yeah, it's like E3 2009, they had a Wii kiosk set up that was showing off various WiiWare. Like you had to pick what game you
wanted. Yeah, it had Cave Story on it and about five other games. But like if you wanted to play Cave Story, you had to wait for this other guy to finish Rock and Roll Climber.
No, that was not there because I would have played it. It was like Nick's Quest.
Yeah, well, Nick's Quest is really good. But yeah, I mean, it was like a smorgasbord and it was one Wii and there was this long line because there were so many different games and the people who knew about them wanted to play them. And it's just a mess. I mean, it's really not a great way to do it. So unless they have some kind of special cave in their booth where you can go in and play the download games.
Like, could we see something from NST? Like, they're still around, right? They're still working on Mario versus Donkey Kong games?
Project Hammer 3DS?
Oh,
no.
Oh, be still my heart.
That's my big prediction.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, I would crap myself.
But surely you can make a good puzzle platformer game in 3D. And
oh, sure.
I'm not sure if NST is the one to do it, but, you know, fingers crossed.
They should show off Picross 3D 3D.
See, I was thinking about that, Picross 9D. And my concern is that they would probably put that as a download game now. Mm-hmm.
They probably would, yeah. I mean, it sold for like $20 even on DS, I think, so.
Here's what I was wondering. If they would announce, and this may be a shocker for people here, but what... My big 3DS prediction that I was thinking is, as they're going to go blow out the Nintendo Network stuff, as they give the full blowout of what the shopping experience would be like on Nintendo Network, my prediction was that they would discuss for 3DS, DS games that they've published, downloadable on your 3DS. And my guess would be that they would have a unit out there demoing that.
You're talking about like a kind of like a virtual console to download DS games onto your 3DS?
Yes.
That is a really cool idea. I mean, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Since you're going to be downloading 3DS games like New Super Mario Bros. 2, why not get a free download copy of New Super Mario Bros. 1?
Yeah, and the examples given during their investors conference were like a lot of DS games, right? Tamagotchi Collection and stuff like that. They were talking about those games as games that you want all the time on your gaming system. So.
Yes. Let's put it this way. I could see them saying, we are going to put out games that we published on the DS, on 3DS, as download games. Now, we and then leave it up to other publishers to come to them afterwards. And I could see them totally having 3DS set up to show you DS downloaded games on your 3DS.
That would be really cool.
Because for them, that potentially increases the size of the 3DS's eShop by about 1,000 games.
Yeah, it does. That's pretty crazy, man. I like it. I like it a lot. You know, in terms of third-party stuff, I'm definitely looking forward to Castlevania. I think it makes a lot of sense for that to be there. You know, I guess the big question right now is who's developing it? Is it really coming out of Japan with Igarashi, or might it be made by the Lords of Shadow guys in Spain? I'm kind of okay either way. I mean, I think you get very different results depending on those two outcomes, but I kind of like it either way. I'm excited to see it.
Might be nice to have a fresh take on the series from, you know.
See, but at this point, wouldn't Igarashi be a fresh take on the series? Yeah. I mean, he's been cut out.
True.
Any take would be a fresh take at this point. But I'm just excited for Castlevania, period, on my hand.
Yeah, I actually do kind of feel like it's got to be Igarashi, because I feel like the Lords of Shadow team would be kind of a waste here.
Well, and they're also kind of working on Lords of Shadow 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but I have to imagine, well, that game's going to be at E3 as well and done.
It'll probably come out on Wii U, I would imagine.
Probably.
Should.
And like I said, I would imagine it's done. It's probably been in the can for a while now.
I don't know.
That game's been developed. It's been in development for a while. I mean, it might be the tweaks phase, but not like major development still left to do. Because like I said, it's been in development for probably 2 years now.
Yeah. I would love for Nintendo to show off some kind of, like big RPGs for 3DS. You're kind of getting to the point in the life cycle of the system where you can kind of start to show off some of your really big epic games that people like to sink their teeth into. I mean, you know, you got Tales of Abyss already, but that's a PS2 port. the thing is, I mean, the obvious contenders there would be someone like Square Enix. And I think there will come a time when Square Enix is announcing big RPGs for 3DS. And maybe, you know, Bravely Default is that, but I don't think that's going to be shown in English yet. It's still a ways out.
I would guess it probably is, because they've already had demos in Japan like 6-7 months ago. They could just translate those demos into English. I mean, apparently in a convention setting with all the really neat cards and things set up that you can do the AR stuff with, apparently that's a really neat demo. You don't walk away feeling like you know a lot about the game, but you're still somewhat inspired by the effect of the AR. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they set that up in a corner of Square's massive ass booth.
Really loud booth.
Loud, enormous, obnoxious booth that will have a Front Mission game somewhere. And then you'll wonder, who the fuck buys Front Mission games?
Like we do every single time we see one.
You know, I would love for them to announce some kind of Final Fantasy, you know, spin-off or something for 3DS. But with Theater Rhythm coming out this summer, I think that's going to be more the focus. And I think that will probably show up at the press conference, because it's a big, pretty Final Fantasy game with popular music.
And Theater Rhythm's been really big for them on the download enhancements front, because they've made a lot of money selling level packs.
Yep. So that's going to be a big focus. It's not really a new announcement, though, and that's more what we're interested in here for the preview.
You did miss the obvious company, which is Monolith, which, keep in mind, they finished Xenoblade in Japanese a long time ago.
Yeah.
And aren't they working on Project X or whatever it's called?
I've seen that there are people who work at Monolith working on Project X, but I've never seen that they're working on Project X. I saw Banpresto was working on Project X. Now, it could be that they're involved with it, but there was a rumor a few months ago that Nintendo had a company working on a game with a 3DS RPG that is a sequel that is also being used as a pun.
A pun?
Yeah, as in 3-D. So my immediate guess there would be Baten Kaito's 3D, because it would be the third game in the series, and Monolith had 2 years to work on it, and it would be an RPG they could put out.
After Origins, I think Baten Kaitos is dead forever.
Maybe.
Yeah, I can't see there being an audience
that
for that
game
anymore.
Was such a bomb. I mean, it was just...
Kind of was, but still.
You know, we'll see Kingdom Hearts. We'll see the new, new Professor Layton that was a launch title for 3DS in Japan over a year ago.
That we've already played at E3.
Yeah. But the new Layton will be announced. It'll get a release date for the fall.
Yep.
But yeah, I think there will be some kind of like sort of unknown RPG announced, whether it's from an internal Nintendo team or some third party, but something to kind of, you know, get people excited in the West, maybe something that would appeal to them.
So many fanboys are screaming right now, Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
Well, they've been screaming that since the PS3 demo reel.
If that ever happens, it'll be on Vita probably, but I mean, I don't even want that really. Here's the thing, from a Western developer, and this was something Greg had in the outline that he really wanted us to talk about, I think it is very interesting, because Western support for 3DS has been piss poor. And you know, especially if you take out Ubisoft, it's almost non-existent. Right. There's very little from EA. I think, you know, something from a creditable EA franchise like Dead Space would make a lot of sense. Even maybe like a sequel to Boom Blocks could be a big deal on 3DS. It might even, you know, it might not work as well in terms of controls, but it might fit the market a little better. I think Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is probably a given for 3DS. I don't know who's making it. Apparently InSpace is not making it. But but I think that probably will happen. It's definitely coming to Vita this year, so it makes sense to do a 3DS version as well.
Oh, what about the Conduit? remember there was that Conduit 3DS demo that Aaron played.
I understand. I don't think that game will ever come out. I think they will use that engine to make some licensed shit.
It's just waiting for John to give it an 8. I mean,
I have an 8.5 sitting right back here in my pocket that's just waiting. It's getting hot. It needs to be taken out and cooled off. You know what I mean?
Look, we have an Abraham Space Lincoln to deal with here. I mean, come on.
Maybe if they made him like the main character, like the star of that game.
If they made a game called there's already Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunters, they'd probably get sued. But Abraham Lincoln Space Warrior, I'd be like, yes, we're good here.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm looking for some more news, some clarity around Monster Hunter 4. I know Capcom isn't going to show anything, but
yeah, at E3, I wouldn't expect that.
Yeah.
It'll come out sometime later in the summer from Japan.
The best you could hope for is that maybe they decide they change their mind on Monster Hunter 3 in Western territories.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but...
No, I don't either. But, I mean, that's if they're going to do anything, that would be all they'd probably do is change their mind and say, no, we'll bring that out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Everybody's waiting for Monster Hunter 4, really. They're not... That's the big news, really.
So, Enix, what have they done with Dragon Quest lately?
Dragon Quest X on Wii. And it may be shown at E3, but it wouldn't be a really big focus for Nintendo just because that series is not a big seller in the West. I mean, they may show it, but I think certainly the Wii version of that game is never coming out in the West. I think it's only going to be on Wii U, and that version has never been shown anywhere. So this probably is not the place they will debut it.
No, I was wondering if they had some kind of Dragon Quest monsters, Queen of Hearts, Jokers.
Well, what about Rocket Slime? Has that been confirmed for North America?
It has not. They could show that. It's a boutique title, but they could show that for 3DS.
Yeah, and I mean, it takes up a slot in the booth.
Yeah.
I mean, Heroes of Ruin is obviously going to be there.
Yes, Heroes of Ruin, I think, you know, the way that game is shaping up, and especially with Diablo 3 just coming out, I think Nintendo would be very smart to give that a showcase and to explain to people what it is and why people in the West should be interested in it. I think if they gave it the attention, it might be kind of a sleeper hit, like something that people are kind of talking about and buzzing about. I don't know that they are going to do that, but it would be wise to me for them to do that.
It checks your checkboxes too, because that game, although it's being published by Square Enix, is a Western title.
Yes.
I mean, it is. I mean, Square Enix, it's almost unfair to just immediately assume a Square Enix published game is a Japanese-based game, because I would say about half their development resources are based in North America at this point.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Square Enix, they even like kind of took it upon themselves to step their game up, because they weren't happy with where they were at either, so...
No.
I'm sure that just filtered out across the entire company.
Yeah. I mean, we could see something like that. I mean, we could see something from a Japanese publisher that's coming as a U.S. I mean, because there's a bunch of Japanese publishers doing this who are working on with Western developers to make games for them because they understand that they can't just make niche Japanese titles anymore and be super profitable. Level 5 opened up Western-based development arms to deal with that same problem. We could see something out of them in that front. I mean, honestly, Level 5 has like 18 games are due to show us for the 3DS at this point.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know that any of those are going to be Western focused, but it'd be very interesting if their first Western focused American developed Level 5 game was debuted at E3. That'd be quite a surprise.
That would be the place to debut it, obviously. Yeah.
But also, guys like us are the only ones who would actually care, because. Right. Most of the West doesn't know who Level 5 is, so it's a tricky thing. You'd have to make it something really interesting looking, you know. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I would like for this to happen. I think it'd be really cool, and it really would get Americans excited about 3DS and Europeans too. But you know, if Nintendo's smart, they should look at stuff like Skyrim and say, wow, this was a huge, huge hit. People are totally obsessed over it. Wouldn't it be nice if you could play something similar to this on your 3DS? You could have it with you all the time. People become totally addicted to it. They tell all their friends about it. They're all comparing this, telling stories about the things that happened in their games. That's sort of the kind of thing that happened with Monster Hunter in Japan, and there's nothing like that on the handheld market in the West.
Imagine it as a download game. All 3DS games are download games.
Right.
So it's always on your system.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're even better.
Always there.
But it certainly would be a retail release. But I think, you know, if Nintendo's really smart, they should be talking to developers like Bethesda and seeing if they can get someone to make this kind of game for 3DS. You know, redesign it in such a way that it fits the platform, but something that has that same kind of pull and same kind of obsession mechanic in it, and a big world to explore, you know. And I think there's a real possibility that could work. Not saying it's going to happen, but it should. They should get something like that.
Just don't make it Sonic related.
I was going to mention that.
Okay, well, why don't we move on? Oh, and Craig wanted us to address redesign. Not going to happen. No, there will be no 3DS redesign. First of all, it's way too early and it doesn't make sense from a money standpoint, but also when a 3DS redesign is ready to be shown, it will be shown in Japan first.
Yep. In fact, it may not even be at a press event. Remember, in the past few redesigns, they've just, here's the press release, here it is!
The past couple times, it's actually leaked out ahead of time, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, but that's true.
That will not be shown in America first.
And at the recent investors conference, I think that Iwata said that the 3DS was just becoming profitable.
Yeah, actually pretty quick by most new hardware releases these days.
But not by Nintendo standards, obviously.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, redesigns can, and in the past have, been also done to make the hardware design more profitable. So I wouldn't be surprised if one comes along expressly for that purpose.
They can't take the components cable out this time, so I don't know.
It's true. I mean, you can just rework the guts sometimes, so that sometimes you'll get silent redesigns where they don't announce it's a new redesign, but the guts are a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, what Greg wants us to talk about is the CirclePad Pro, and it's affecting any potential redesign. But the reality of the situation is, Nintendo hasn't even seemed to take the CirclePad Pro seriously, despite the fact that I finished Revelations with it this weekend. I tried playing the final boss with the stylus just to see, and I found it to be utterly impossible. I just wanted to see what it was like, and the answer is terrible. So, I mean, I wonder if maybe we'll see them take it more seriously as an accessory at this E3 than they have been.
You know what would make them take it more seriously is if Western developers wanted to put out games that supported it.
Right.
So that's kind of a chicken and egg thing. I'm not saying it won't happen, but it won't happen from Nintendo.
I'll be curious if games at E3 that support it are playable with it.
That's a good
question.
Yeah,
like how much they encourage it.
How many CirclePad Pros can we spot around E3? I'm guessing not very many.
Yeah, because right now it seems like the redheaded stepchild of the entire 3DS universe.
Well, you can imagine 90% of E3 attendees are going to walk up to that demo and say, what the fuck is this thing?
Yeah.
They've never
yeah.
seen one. They've never heard of it before.
What is this 3DS helmet?
Yeah.
Did this thing have a concussion?
Yeah, I mean, you can't even see it in stores. I mean,
yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah, but here, if they show Call of Duty Black Ops 2 at the press conference being played with a CirclePad Pro, that's a different story, okay? Then things have been reset a little bit.
If they show anything with the Pro, I almost feel like they have to devote time during the conference to talk about it.
Yeah, basically as if it never existed before that point.
Exactly.
I mean, they almost have to. And for Nintendo, that's really uncomfortable because this is supposed to be the Wii U's big blowout and the 3DS is sort of second wave. So if you want to spend time devoted to a piece of plastic that's ill-conceived and works off a fucking IR port, I don't really think that's how they want to waste their time.
I kind of agree. I mean, they will spend plenty of time talking about 3DS, but I don't know if they want to spend part of that time talking about CirclePad Pro. It really depends on how much interest there is from developers.
Right.
There's not much interest from gamers right now in the West, but that's because there's almost nothing that supports it, and it's very hard to get. So if there's developer and publisher interest in the accessory, then Nintendo will make it easier to get, and they will make a bigger...
Right.
They'll make it more visible.
I would expect Nintendo to act like they already know about it. Like, oh yeah, of course, you know, this supports it. this game supports the CirclePad Pro. Of course, you know about the CirclePad Pro. I don't have to tell you about it. Let's just move on.
You want to see Reggie pull out a 3DS with the CirclePad Pro out of his massive pockets?
Of course.
He's just stitched a burlap sack into his pants. He just pulls it out. There we go.
And he'll open it up, and inside is a Game Boy Micro. So moving on to Wii U. Obviously this will be the big story out of Nintendo's press conference, out of their booth, out of the show. It is the only new hardware, new console being shown at E3 this year. And it's interesting to me because right now, other than us, nobody's talking about Wii U. Okay. Yeah. I listen to plenty of video game podcasts and do multi-platform stuff. It's not even in the conversation. It's like they played it last year and then totally wiped it out of their minds. And it's Nintendo's fault because they didn't show real games for it. They showed mini games, and that's the stuff that people already associated with Wii and already associate with being totally forgettable and ignorable. So they have to show real games, things that are meaty demos of games that are clearly more than just the demo itself. And that's going to be the difference between this year and last year. The hardware will be more interesting. They'll fix their messaging on that. But this is really about the software. And they have to do some stuff that's going to make people sit up and pay attention, you know, and get people's attention and say, hey, you know, Wii U's coming out this year. You should probably plan on buying one. And right now, I don't think very many people are really thinking in those terms yet, other than hardcore Nintendo fans, of course.
I feel like the Wii U is almost, it's been kind of dismissed as a toy. by most of the mainstream game media. It's going to have another goofball controller. It's another weird Nintendo thing that only Nintendo fans are going to like. Let's just move on and talk about PS3 and 360.
I don't even think they've given it that much thought. I think they've just sort of gone like, eh. Nintendo is the master of marketing at the E3 event. I mean, they may totally fuck up the rest of their marketing. They know exactly whom will be eating out of their hand when they put these events together.
Yep.
So what we're likely to see is, we actually saw this a little bit with 3DS, and we saw a little bit with the Wii U last year.
A reel of developers talking about the platform and not really developing for it?
No! 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 God, Jesus, no!
Oh, we will absolutely have that. We will absolutely have the
third-party I know we will, role. But why?
Mm. Well, why? Here's the thing, because these guys have actually worked with it, and so it's a chance for Nintendo to kind of send this message like, look, you don't have to take our word for it. Listen to these guys. They've actually used the hardware, and these guys can say, it's the most powerful console I've ever developed for. And that will get people's attention. And that's the thing. If Nintendo's going to show these multi-platform games and stuff like that, they need to send the message at E3 that games look better on Wii U than anywhere else.
No, they need to send the message that games play better on Wii U than anywhere else.
They have to say both. And they can say play better, but that's easy for people to ignore and dismiss. Here's the thing, E3 is, you know, as you guys know, it's a venue where you get to see things for a very short period of time. And if you want to make a strong impression, graphics matter. And especially if you want people to spend a lot of money on new hardware, graphics really matter. And Wii U may not be as powerful as the next Xbox and the next PlayStation that aren't even going to be announced at this show. But it has to look better than 360 and PS3. And Nintendo needs to make that very clear. They need to prove it, and they need to have developers admitting it and talking very enthusiastically about that fact.
Yeah, but I feel like also at E3, I mean, the one thing that plays into Nintendo's hands is the fact that, I mean, so often with their hardware, it's like you really don't get it. Nobody really gets it until they actually see it in action, see people, you know, hands-on playing it. And I feel like this is happening with the Wii U again, where everybody's like, oh, whatever, Nintendo. You're off there in your little corner doing your weird stuff. But I feel like after E3, people will be like, holy shit.
But, you know, if you look back historically at what the 3DS did in 2009, they briefly had the media eating out of the palm of their hand, and then the media went back to more or less ignoring the 3DS mm-hmm. until E3 2010 rolled around. And I think at the Wii U, if you remember, the press coverage of the Wii U when it first came out was universally pretty strong in the gaming press. Like, it was positive. They were all kind of confused, but they were upbeat about it. Kohler wrote something calling Measure Up like the best game of E3.
I remember that. Yeah.
because Kohler, seriously, dude, what the fuck? But people were like legitimately hyped on the system, and then about a week passed and they realized there's nothing real here. This is all just smoke and mirrors at the moment.
Yeah, they played a bunch of mini games.
Nintendo knows how to, quote, win the show. So I think they'll be okay there. Mm-hmm. They have to present a lineup that says, look, we understand what happened with the 3DS. We could win the show and still have a 3DS style lineup for the first year. But we're not doing that because it's not important to win E3. It's about actually giving you crap to play.
That's right.
And I think the biggest lesson they need to take away from it isn't that it's more powerful, that it has more gigaflops than the 360. These are games that will be here in the next 6 months that you will be playing, that you will only be able to play here, that make this platform worth having. There will not be a period where you sit there and go, great, I bought this $400 system and I have nothing to play on it.
Yeah.
That will not happen again. And we understand that.
E3 is the start of the Wii U launch.
It is. I mean, if you could say that E3 is the first territory that Wii U launches in.
James.
I like that, James.
He's a smart feller. Mm. Now, Guillaume, you were at E3 last year, right?
Yep. I played Wii U. Other than Shield Pose, which really was a lot of fun.
Shield Pose is amazing.
It is. There were no real games there. And so I'm looking forward to playing more. You know, you think of the big franchises this generation, and they came up this generation. And I'm thinking, like, does Nintendo have something new to show, something that could blow up big. And I really can't imagine it. It's been so long. It's been so long since Pikmin. And that was not like something that put the GameCube on the map the way that Assassin's Creed put, you know, like the HD consoles on the map.
Yeah, they've played it pretty safe for a long time. I mean, outside of Wii Sports.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we get Blops too, obviously.
But like something exclusive, something...
Well, there'll be Killer Freaks, but I think it's going to be hard for Ubisoft to get away from Red Steel you know, Idis. And you know, I hope Killer Freaks is a much better game. But I don't think people are looking to Ubisoft to launch a... Look, Ubisoft does not have a good history with first-person shooters.
No, they're so terrible.
If that's what that game is, I think they're going to have a hard time building up credibility with gamers that this is an exclusive title you should get really pumped up about. There's a decade of bad first-person shooters from Ubisoft to go back to. I mean, outside of a casual Rainbow Six game.
I mean, you can go all the way back to 13.
Yeah,
I mean,
13 is, yeah, exactly. It looks cool. It's not good.
I'm thinking about Nintendo themselves here, though. Like, we've heard Miyamoto say that he wanted to create new characters. Has it been long enough since then for him to actually have come up with something and to show something?
I hope so. That would be amazing.
Has it been long enough? Yes. Has he?
That's one of those crazy wild cards that there's just no way to predict what might happen. And those are the most exciting moments in any Nintendo event when they just bust something out that would have been impossible to predict.
Right.
And you always hope that that happens. I really, really would like to see it.
I mean, that's what Miyamoto's there for. He's there to just come out and go, yeah, I've got something. Look at this. And you go, what? What is that? What are you doing?
One of the reasons why I find it kind of hard to get excited for the Wii U launch is that I think of past launches for Nintendo consoles, and I picture Mario, and I picture, you know, WarioWare, and that's all that comes to mind.
I mean, Shield Pose, obviously, is WarioWare.
Yeah. And like, the WarioWare games are very fun. I enjoy them. But they're also, like, very much tech demos to show off the new controls and everything. And will that be enough? For me personally, I don't think it will.
They're mini games. They're great, but they're mini games. And Nintendo really has to, you know, they already built up a bad reputation with Wii of having too many mini games, especially early on.
Right.
And for a lot of people, it never got past that. You know, that soured them so much that they never played the better stuff that came out later. So I think Nintendo they're going to have mini games at E3 for Wii U. There will be mini games at launch. They'll probably come packed in with the system, but they've got to have more than that. They've got to have meatier experiences. And, you know, Pikmin 3 is going to be one of them, but it's a sequel. Yes, it's a franchise we haven't seen in a long time, but it is in some ways kind of a known quantity. I don't think they're going to totally reinvent Pikmin and do something crazy with it, you know.
Yeah, but with a tablet, I mean, like, there could be something more there. And if one game has the chance to be really graphically impressive, I think that's probably Pikmin 3.
Agreed. Yes, and it will be a very good showcase for that reason. Absolutely. You know, I think the new Mario game is... what I would love is if the Mario thing they showed last year really was a placeholder, and whatever they're doing with Mario, whether it's a launch title or, you know, very soon after launch or whatever, I would love for it to, you know, even if at the essence of it is still a 2D Mario game and it is still basically new Super Mario Brothers, I would love for them to, I don't know if rebranding it is the right word, but make the graphics different, give it some twist that none of the other versions have that's really, really cool. Because playing it on your tablet screen is not it. That's not enough to make people really want this. And you know, playing it with your Mii character is nothing. So they've really got to do something that's a lot more exciting with that. I don't know. I think the number one thing that I'm most excited about from Wii U is seeing whatever Retro Studios has been doing. I hope that they have a game there. I feel like they probably will. And I don't know if it'll be a launch title. Maybe it's too early for that, but I would love to see what that is. And I want that to be something that's just really exciting. So, you know, this stuff about Metroid and Star Fox mixed up together, I think is pretty ludicrous. I think it's more someone, maybe that is real, but something got lost in translation. It sounds to me like maybe it's a Metroid game with parts where you fly Samus's ship that are inspired by Star Fox. You know,
I actually want it to be Samus has been turned into a Vulpid and now is part fox, part person. And then I can't go on the internet anymore because it will be full of terrible furry pornography.
Yeah.
And the internet will be ruined. So
I'll just take Metroid Prime 4.
It won't be called that, whatever it is. It will not be called Metroid Prime 4. Guaranteed.
It's a long shot, but Retro has been working on racing tracks where you can, like, jump and glide and go fast. And Also, like, Miyamoto has been, you know, saying good things about the F-Zero franchise recently, like the how well it would match the Wii U. Am I crazy here?
No, you're not crazy. I think we could very well see that. I don't know that I would think Retro is making F-Zero, but I think someone is making F-Zero.
I'm just tired of wishing for F-Zero anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it really needs to happen.
It really does.
And I don't want it on 3DS. It needs to be on Wii U.
Yeah, I mean, Wii U would be cool because, you know, you could play it online. It'd be great.
Yeah.
They could do a lot with it. Like, they could really expand that series beyond what it's been in the past.
Yeah, and it's had a track generator before. Now we've got a tablet controller. Like, it's perfect.
Yep.
All right. You know, Greg was asking about the asymmetric multiplayer, whether we think that'll be a big deal. I kind of feel like it's something that, you know, third parties will show as a mode, something that they support in multiplayer. But that feature is so hard to explain, and it's so hard to jack into familiar franchises that people are going to get really excited about, that I just don't see that being the most important thing about Wii U that people take away from the show. Mm-hmm. It'll be one of the things that they show, and there will be some section of their booth that kind of focuses on doing all this weird multiplayer stuff where one person has the tablet, but I don't think that is the main selling point that Nintendo needs to lean on for launch.
It seems like a kind of a toolbox thing, like, hey, look at this is what can be done with our console. Isn't that impressive?
You know, I think they really just need to push the concepts a little bit further than what we've seen. Like, in the leaked Rayman trailer that we saw, like, there was, like, this girl just moving platforms around, which is pretty boring, while other people were, you know, playing the actual game. But what if you could have, like, a platformer where someone would actually draw the level and people would play them in real time? I mean, like, there can be exciting things to do there. And, you know, like, if someone's going to come up with cool concepts, I would hope it's Nintendo.
I mean, I could see something like maybe with a football game, one guy could catch, one guy could receive, and you could actually, one guy would have the perspective behind the quarterback, and the other guy could actually be the receiver on the field going towards the ball. You could do some cool stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I think they will show some of the near field communication stuff, some of the Skylanders sort of functionality. But again, that cannot be a big deal because not every game can support that. Not every game should support that, quite frankly.
No.
And I think, you know, Nintendo has to be really careful about pushing that too hard because it could very easily be seen as a fad, which it is.
Right.
And if that becomes too synonymous with their console, then it makes their console seem like a fad. So I think that will be something they will give a little bit of attention to because, you know, it's a selling point for people who are crazy about that stuff, but they're not going to have enough games there that use it in any kind of like really meaningful, exciting way that people could get behind. Again, it'll be one of those kind of gimmicky things like AR cards on 3DS that a few games will use, but not every game will use. And even when it's used, it's going to be kind of a backup feature. It's a, you know, it's not the core of the game. It shouldn't be. Do you guys agree? I mean, is there any dissent on that
point? I've like 10 hours playing the Kidicurus cards.
Just playing with the cards?
I'm kidding.
Oh. I was about to pull the eject cord on this podcast.
I was confused there.
Yeah, the whole AR stuff, could not care less.
Yeah, really. I think there'll be at least one Capcom game shown for Wii U.
Oh yeah, Capcom
maybe
will be there.
Maybe going out on a limb there. I know there was some recent news that Capcom basically said they won't have anything for Nintendo platforms at their booth or whatever, but that doesn't mean they won't have a game shown at the show.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'll show something behind closed doors, I think.
I think there will be a big Capcom game shown at the press conference and made a big deal of, because here's the thing, Capcom is one of the rare Japanese developers that actually has a lot of cachet in America too, in the West.
Right.
And they kind of span both sides of the world, and they have traditionally been very supportive of Nintendo platforms, including early. And I think they currently have nothing for Nintendo announced. Nothing for 3DS coming out anytime soon. And
the Leighton crossover.
Just Monster Hunter 4.
Yeah,
the Leighton crossover.
Yeah. The Leighton crossover, yeah. That won't be at E3, sorry. I think Level 5's making that anyway.
There's staff from both companies working on it.
But yeah, I think some kind of big console game. I don't know if it would be exclusive. I don't know. You know, maybe it's something we've seen before, but this is just a special version of it. But something, you know, maybe it's Resident Evil 6. I don't know. But Capcom will have something for Wii U announced, at least shown in video, something They will.
Maybe like a Street Fighter game? Who knows?
Or one of their crossover games. That could totally be there.
Yeah.
Now, John, I know you're always a big, you know, you're always kind of talking about wanting to hear more about the online infrastructure. Do you feel like E3 is the kind of place where you can get that message across? Is this something that they can show or make a big deal out of, maybe settle some fears? Is it practical to do that at E3?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the place to do it. I mean, because that's kind of one of the lingering questions. I mean, I know a lot of people that aren't necessarily Nintendo fans or, you know, don't really care either way. I'm sure they're curious about what exactly Nintendo plans to do with Nintendo Network, and really how it's going to stack up against something like Xbox Live. What exactly? I mean, Nintendo has, they've talked a lot about, you know, how they want to improve that experience. But I mean, E3 is the place. It's the platform to kind of put your money where your mouth is. Or where your mouth has been, if you will.
It's certainly, wow. It's certainly, it's certainly the audience who cares the most about it.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, it's the place to make a splash.
Right, but does Nintendo have any credibility? Like, whatever they say, like, will people actually buy it?
That's tough, because it's hard to demonstrate online features at E3.
What if they pull a Sony and bring, like, Gabe Newell to talk about it?
I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, they have to do something. They have to do something to show that they're serious about allowing people to game online. And that would be something like, okay, hey, maybe they announce that, you know, Black Ops 2 is coming out and it's going to have this list of features that you can do online. I mean, they have to show, not tell. Regardless of what game it is, they have to actually show.
Fair enough. The tough thing about showing a Wii U version of Black Ops 2, even though I think that exists and it will come out this fall, is that the Microsoft's press conference is the day before, and they're going to show a ton of Black Ops 2 because they show a ton of Call of Duty every year at their press conference.
Yeah, remember last year was the 15-minute trailer. It just sat there and went, oh, and then they rolled into the 15-minute trailer of Lara Croft. So,
you know, if Nintendo can show a version at their press conference the next day that looks noticeably better or does something really crazy that people actually care about that's different, maybe they can steal a little bit of that thunder, but
right.
I don't think that's the game it's going to happen on, because it's too easy to just say, we've already seen this. You know, we saw this yesterday.
You know, this is
yeah, it has to be something impactful.
This is what. So how the Black Ops or how the Call of Duty trailer works at Microsoft is 5 to 12 minute video, then 10 minute demo, and then they fade out, and another Microsoft rep comes on to introduce somebody else. What Nintendo cannot possibly do is do any video of that game and then have a demo. They just can't. If they need to go straight to the demo with showing someone using the Wii U tablet in a way that makes the game appreciably more interesting.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, perhaps Black Ops is a bad example in this one, but it has to be a game like that with cachet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? But I would think that they would do something that would be distinctly Nintendo in this case, but
I mean, if they wanted to show a third party, Black Ops is the game, but the problem is Microsoft will fucking poison that water.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, they're probably going to announce right away that they've got, like, the maps, new maps exclusive for a couple of months.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think that Nintendo can change that. And they probably won't try to. Like, they know that the COD audience is pretty much established on that platform, and they're not going to steal them away.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, what could happen, though, I mean, because the different versions of Call of Duty don't play with each other anyway, maybe Nintendo could get them to make, like, exclusive maps that only play on the Wii U version and somehow take advantage of whatever special features that version has. You know, maybe they could do that, and it would get around the deal that Activision has with Microsoft on the standard map packs that all the versions eventually get. I don't know.
Either way, it has to be something that is a seriously online game, not something where online is kind of this neat sort of side deal. It has to be something where the majority of the gameplay is focused on online play.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, some real surprises at Wii U, maybe some features that we weren't expecting, some hardware stuff that's kind of new that we didn't know about before, I think the one thing that they could actually give a little bit of attention to that might excite people is the ability to play backwards compatible stuff on the tablet screen. And maybe that doesn't seem like a big deal, but if you think about the way they want this to be used, you know, they want this in, like, multi-user homes where someone's using the TV for something else. The ability to play all your virtual console stuff and all of your original Wii games on the tablet is, I think, very interesting for people. Very possibly really, really cool. And, you know, it's something that's fairly easy to demo at the booth. It's like something that kind of automatically already supports hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games, which is really nice for a new system at launch.
To be trickled over several years that you have to rebuy for $5.
No. They would be already supported. You would use the copies that you already own. But, you know, I think this is something that people might really care about. And again, it's a feature that none of the other systems can even remotely pull off. But, you know, for an adult gamer, for family gamers, I think there's a lot to be said for that, having that kind of functionality. So I think they might actually show that. What do you guys think? Anything about the hardware that you think might kind of come out and surprise people, or just stuff that hasn't been announced before?
I'm sure there's something, but I don't know what it is. I'll be honest.
Something with the NFC near field?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost impossible for us to make a guess about it. Because we'll probably find out a couple of days before the show. Something will probably leak, but Lord knows what it is. I mean, as pessimistic or inability to guess as that sounds, whatever we guess will probably be wrong.
It's never stopped us before.
Well, no.
For the record.
What about some built-in mini games or something? I was thinking that perhaps like Mario Paint.
Ooh.
That came with the system could be interesting. I mean, like the original Mario Paint came out at a time when like Windows, like what was it, like 3.1 or something new, and like Paint was actually fun to people. So times have changed definitely, but what if like that was the basis of, I really like my idea of someone drawing a platform game in real time thing. Like what if, you know, you had stuff like that integrated.
Swapnote 2.0?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
I think there definitely will be some version of Swapnote for Wii U, but it won't get talked about at E3. Moving on from that, just finally, quick thoughts on Wii and DS. I think they're not going to be at the show very much. There's not a whole lot to show. Certainly, Pokemon Black and White 2 will be shown. They will make a big deal about that. We already kind of know a lot about it with all the announcements coming out of Japan recently, but that'll be the first time it's shown in English. And, you know, there will be some space given to that. In terms of Wii stuff, I think the only thing they might show is, The Last Story, just help out XSEED with a little bit of publicity since they did fund the development of that game to begin with. You know, they're not going to make a huge deal out of it, but just as a bone to throw out there and as a way to kind of spur on some interest in it, I think The Last Story will get some kind of spot in the booth at least.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. I can't really think of anything else. I mean, obviously Dragon Quest, I mean, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to be E3, unfortunately.
It won't.
It's probably futile to hope for like the release of more games like Pikmin 2, New Play Controls. Like, it's probably way too late for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you may have a couple of sort of oddball games announced from Nintendo that they could probably just do cheaply and put out on the Wii just to kind of show that they're still behind the platform.
Right.
But
I feel like they've already kind of run out of juice on that stuff. You know, you look at like Wii Play Plus and Wii Play Motion and stuff like that. It's like the experimental days of just kind of squeezing out whatever ounces of ideas you can out of the Wii. It really feels like that's gone. They've already tried it for the past 2 years and it hasn't gone well for them. You know, Wii sales have been really bad the past year, worse than they expected. So
right
now I have to think they'll make some sort of token effort just to kind of keep the sales going to a certain degree, to keep it at least out there. I can't see them abandoning it absolutely
$100.
Entirely. Yeah, I mean, maybe a price drop or something.
$99. I
mean, it's possible, but nobody at E3 would care about a $100 Wii.
No.
So E3 is just not really the place to announce that.
Nope.
New model that drops virtual console playback.
Oh,
that's already done. No, wait a minute.
I mean, I would say, overall, for me, the exciting thing about this is that I don't think new consoles will be announced by Microsoft and Sony at this E3. I think they're too far out. And the main problem for them is they actually have games coming out this year that they want people to buy, whereas Nintendo
huge
doesn't.
Games, yeah.
And they didn't last year either. So there's too much to lose for Microsoft and Sony in terms of attention. If they put too much attention on new hardware, then it jeopardizes the still fairly major software releases that they've got planned for the existing systems. So this is really Nintendo's chance to shine. They have a lot of opportunity here. And again, I kind of let off with this, but expectations could not be lower for Wii U.
Isn't that the best?
From the general populace.
Yeah.
I love when nobody has the expectations for me.
Yeah, I mean, this it's kind of an interesting time because, I mean, there's still a ton of huge games that are coming out. I mean, Halo 4 is going to be coming out next year. They're talking about Grand Theft Auto 5 coming out.
You got The Last of Us, that game from the Uncharted team that people think is awesome. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff coming out for the other systems. So they're going to be entirely focused on these big franchises and big releases, and Nintendo is the only new hardware in town. They've really got a wonderful chance to make a big deal out of themselves and get a lot of attention and show people why they should want a Wii U. And they're total idiots if they don't take good advantage of it.
I agree.
So we'll see. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I'm upset that I won't be there, but it just couldn't work out.
Yeah, I'll do what I can for the home team as well. Probably a podcast or two.
If all you're doing is a podcast or two, I will fire you.
Oh, you know, maybe I'll...
On the fucking spot.
Maybe I'll bless the site with my pros, James. We'll see.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
We'll see what happens. It depends. I'll see what I'm doing that day.
No,
I'll
check. Needs you to post screenshots.
I'll talk to my people.
That's what James wants.
Oh, God.
I'm pretty excited for E3. I've heard there's some pretty good curry to be had.
Oh, boy. Guillaume, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you. We're going to do a lot of fun podcasts. You would definitely want to be refreshing your podcast feed often. We might even have multiple episodes per day going up if everything goes right. I've got a new microphone that should sound much better than the stuff we've done in past years. It'll also make it much easier to upload this stuff. So I'm looking to have a pretty high output for RFN. If you're not already subscribed to Connectivity, you will definitely want to do that as well. They're going to have a lot of podcast coverage on that show as well during E3. So we're going to hit you from at least two different sides. The website is just going to be smack full of coverage. Just refresh all day long because stuff will scroll right off the page. You don't want to miss it. We'll probably do those daily wrap-up articles where we kind of gather some of the highlights because it is easy to miss.
Yeah, I look forward to reading about everything that I've missed while at E3.
Yeah, that happens a lot too. We check our site while we're at the show to find out what's going on. Anyway, it's going to be really fun. Our coverage is going to be awesome. Of course, you can send all of your emails. We will read them. We won't probably get a chance to talk about many of your emails until after E3, but we'll certainly keep them in mind. And if you have specific requests for things you want us to cover at the show, let us know. Write in, and we will do our best. The email address for this podcast is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. In terms of plugs, you can hear Guillaume over on Connectivity, the last episode.
Indeed. I defend Kirby's honor.
That's right.
Somebody has to.
Yeah, it's a fun little segment. And also wanted to let people know that we've got brand new shirt designs on our t-shirt store. You know, we had the first one with a big character art. It's kind of a black t-shirt, and it took up a lot of... It was a big graphic, and we heard from some people that they'd prefer something that was a little bit simpler, maybe just a logo on a more, you know, classy, professional-looking shirt that you could kind of maybe wear to, I don't know, wear out to dinner or something like that, and we've got that now. So if you go to the shirt shop, there'll be a link in the show notes. You can go check out the new designs. We've got ringer t-shirts. We've got like a baseball style t-shirt. There's a new one on organic cotton that looks very nice with just the logo. And there's also a Connectivity shirt that you can pick up there. So go to the show notes.
These shirts are classy.
They're classy. They're nice. And the original, of course, is also there too. If you want to wear our faces on your chest, you can also still pick up that one. So definitely go check out the new shirt designs. All sales will support the website and these podcasts. So we do appreciate you checking it out. And that's all. The next time we talk to you will be from E3. Check it out, man. See you later.
Bye.
Later.
Au revoir.